Welcome to That Entrepreneur Life, a podcast about entrepreneurship that takes you from idea to launch and beyond. Each week, your hosts, Andrew Lees and Clint McPherson, discuss different business topics aimed at adding value to any entrepreneur's journey.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of That Entrepreneur Life. I'm Andrew Lees, and I got my co-host, Clint McPherson, here. What's happening, man? How you doing today?
Not much, man. Good to be on the show again. Good to record, like always, and love joining you and whatever guest comes on. It's always a fun time.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, we got a special guest on the show today, guys. He's a seasoned business coach, and his superpower is telling a brand story in a way that connects with customers and drives sales. So if you want to sell more with better storytelling, stick around to learn more. But before I introduce our special guest today, guys, I want to remind you to subscribe to our podcast and to our mailing list through our website so that you don't miss out on all the free resources we have to help you start and grow your business. But with that said, I'd like to welcome our special guest today, Mike Winnenstein, to the show. How are you doing today, brother?
Hey, doing fine. Good to be with you guys.
Yeah, you too, Mike. It's really a pleasure to have you on the show, and we're excited to kind of dig into a few questions and just kind of let it roll from there.
Well, let's see if you say it's a pleasure at the end.
Even more of a pleasure, I'm sure. There you
go. I'm sure we will, Mike. So, Mike, I mean, we usually start this every episode off after our introduction by, you know, asking a staple in our podcast as far as, you know, we like to know where your entrepreneurial journey started. And what it is about entrepreneurship that really gets you motivated and keeps you moving every day, man.
Sure. Guy, you know, my first thing as an entrepreneur was probably mowing yards. But when I was 13, I took my bar mitzvah money and I bought a table saw because I thought I loved woodworking. It turns out that I did. I still do it. And I hired some of the kids in the neighborhood to make these hanging planters for a lady who lived in a sinkhole. And wow. She really was one of the world's premier orchid growers. She grew these very exotic things she'd sell for like thousands of dollars. And we made the little things to her specifications. And from that, I took a ride over to some of the flower growing, like Apopka, where they grow tons of flowers, millions and billions of flowers, and sold thousands of them. And that paid for me to be an exchange student overseas. So that was my first taste. And what I liked about that was that you can basically do whatever you want, but there's a limit. It has to be what your customers want. You're not allowed to make money doing anything. You can only make money at what people are willing to pay you for. And I got my school of hard knocks at 13 because the first four products didn't work. So that's when I kind of knew. So now I've got a nice balance between what I want and what others want. And if you know those limits and you work within that, there's just no limit to how far you can go.
Yeah. That's an incredible balance. And they do say that the number one reason that businesses fail is because there isn't a good product market fit. There isn't a demand for the product. You know, we think that my idea is amazing and solves a problem for me, but might not solve a problem for enough people. Even if it solves a problem for a few people doesn't necessarily pay the bills unless those few people are, you know, unless you're selling tickets to the moon and, you know, then yeah, a few people may pay the bills, but
yeah, you can't buy a ticket as of this morning with, you know, you can buy a ticket to 61 miles up and spend 3 minutes waitlist, but you can't.
Yeah, exactly. The yeah. The, you know, the billionaires are racing up there and, it's pretty wild. Yeah. I saw that. And with Elon Musk's, venture where you can, I think it's like $125,000 or something, $150,000 or whatever to go up there and hang out at the edge of space for a little bit. I mean, hey, it's definitely a lot of money, but it's not like people can do that. You know, there's some people, yeah,
for,
not
for
everybody.
$35, but you can, or maybe $100, you can get a Disney pass and do Tower of Terror, but go. It's a lot shorter.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm good with that for now. I'm going to let them work out the bugs up there in space before I get up there.
You know, this idea of market fit, I think is really important. I want to go back to my, the little story about being a kid. When I was 13, or 14, because I ran the business for a few years, I couldn't drive. So my market limit was how far I could ride my bicycle. And then my market limit was how many of these things can I carry on my bicycle?
Yeah.
I want you to hang on to that thought and keep this one in mind too. In my opinion, or at least something I've been picking up from reading a lot and talking to colleagues, we're moving from a world of millions, especially in professional services, to a world of just a few thousand. You don't need more than a few hundred clients if you're a strategy consultant, or a few thousand if you're an accountant or a more basic kind of professional services provider. So I'd say that in addition to knowing what you want and what the market wants and that market fit, it has to be something that you can address quickly. And if you can have the nerve and the control and the discipline to not go too far out there, chances of getting something that you can actually build into something are a lot better. So
yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, niching down is definitely very important. Something that I think we're all guilty of sometimes is trying to be too broad, trying to solve too many problems for too many people. Mm-hmm. And then we end up kind of being masters of none. And you're right. I think it's important. Yeah. You know what you want people to know what you do quickly and know that it solves their problem. And if it doesn't, they move on and that's cool. And even with like, you look at paid ads, you're going to spend less because you're dialed in on a certain person. They're just not going to click and waste your money if they know that you don't help them. And that's a good thing. You want that.
You know, it would be so much easier if the world worked differently, because right now we have to know what people want, but they're not telling us.
Yeah.
Be better advertising or more about them telling you what you want.
Yeah.
But if customers advertise, I would love that world, because then I could like cherry pick who I wanted to talk to.
We grew up
on the sell side internet instead of the buy side.
That's awesome. Yeah. There's probably a way to do that somehow. And I'd love to work with you to figure out how. That would be cool.
All right, so we got to do $3 billion ideas today. That was one, okay.
Yeah,
okay, that works on a roll. For sure.
Only like 10 minutes in, that's awesome.
So you said you had some questions. I also have more experience than just being a 13-year-old, nursery salesperson.
Oh, 100%.
There are lots 100%. Of other things we can talk about.
Yeah, for sure. No, I know we could dig into that even more. But no, that's a really cool story. So you work with companies to tell their story and figure out, and which is super important. Something I think that's overlooked and undervalued is your brand story and even copywriting. You know, people don't, like I've heard a lot recently as I've been listening to different podcasts, different marketing guys, how they'll take like the first thing that they did, even if they had to put it on a credit card, is they'll take when it comes to marketing, at least they'll take a copywriting class, or a course. And I think that, you don't really think of that as being a really valuable asset, a valuable tool that you have, but it's so, so important because everything starts with marketing. Everything starts with storytelling and copywriting. So what do you think the best way for a brand to differentiate itself is? Is it copywriting? Is it something else? Is it a combination? What do you think that is?
If I had to say it's one thing, it is the ability to listen to your customers so well and to shape your company to their needs so well that what they want most is what you do best.
Mm-hmm.
That is the formula. You're the best at what they want most. You've got to market. Then you've got to do two other things. Like you said, everything starts with a story.
Mm-hmm.
For every hour that you put into your product, you've got to put an hour into making sure that your product connects. And the last thing is, as you're building your product and as you're making those connections, you want to build them in an agile fashion. So many people take the learnings that they got from their professors in school, from an uncle who ran, that wet teddy bear thing for, whatever insurance company, commercial that is, and they kind of go forward with that and they try to mass produce and optimize and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's not always the best way to go, because in order to scale something, it has to be buyable by a bazillion people. And most products and services are much more niche than that. Mm-hmm. So if you can build the ability to adapt into your organization, I put to everybody that that's the capability that's probably worth as much as your core product or service idea. because the world will force you to change. So if change is easy and you're not doing pivots and changes and transformations, but you're always evolving, that's the smart way to go in today's world, because everything is different. The gloves are off. Nobody knows what the future's like. They're talking about the roaring 20s, the things and the companies and the efforts that are going on today with AI, VR, any other two-letter designation. That's what's shaping the world going forward. Mm-hmm. We all are going to have to adapt to serve clients better, deliver more value, do it in new ways, and make some money at the same time. So whatever you start with isn't going to survive. You can't outguess the market. Nobody can. But the, if you're wired to be adjustable, kind of like one of those universal joints that you use to tighten a wrench, then you're golden. So put that in. So those are the three things, I think.
Yeah. And yeah, I think what you're talking about there is trying to figure out, you got to figure out what that fit is in the market and how your product serves your customer the best to make sure that what you're offering is what they need. And I think what you're saying, right, is that, because I was going to ask you how, if somebody is trying to figure out, they're just starting out and they're not sure if the product that they have or the service that they have is going to be a good fit for any audience. How do you figure that out? How do you know? And I think what you're saying is testing is the key.
Yeah. You know, 100%. There are a couple of ways to tackle this issue. If you're a brand new entrepreneur and you're just dedicated to being an entrepreneur, but you don't really have an idea, you know, should you start with something and then just keep hacking and adjusting until you find something? I believe that theory will work, but you might be really old before it does.
that's 100%. Tough. And you're just chasing all these different things all over the place and not.
Yeah. So you're like a bright, shiny object. You're shaking, but you're shaking in place and emitting light every once in a while, but you're not really getting anywhere. I have a suggestion for the folks that are doing that right now, and they've had a few fits and starts and it hasn't clicked yet, and they're starting to fight with their spouses or partners and resources are running thin, but they still have that entrepreneurial drive. Try this. Just try, like, slap yourself in the face in the mirror and say, I'm not going to make things that I want. I'm going to make things my customers want. So go out and find a discrete customer set and start listening to them. Spend all your time getting deeper and deeper and deeper into the needs of your market. And the hardest thing to do when you do that work is to not let your idea of what that product or service should be kind of color your vision. You can't wear, you know, my view of the world glasses when you do that. You've got to like turn around and look at their view of the world. If you can learn how they see things, how they see their problems, how they frame their opportunities, what the context is, what the greatest value goals are, and where they are, you know, because they can't leap to here if they're a small step kind of a company. You've got to get inside their head, inside their heart, and inside their pocketbook. I don't mean taking money, but you need to understand how they make the financial decisions. If you go from that perspective, chances are that you'll be able to discover a need in the world and then turn your entrepreneurial juices on 100% and go further faster than they could go, because everybody is stuck where they are. So there's opportunity everywhere.
100%. Yeah, I completely agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think when it comes down to it, I think once that product or whatever, you know, you find that after asking all these questions, how you can solve the problem, right? I think when it comes down to it, I mean, and I struggled with this for a while, and I'm still trying to get better every day, right? Is when it comes to the copy for that specific product, because that's where, like, at the end of the day, like, if you're not really selling after you've heard and you listen and you've asked questions and you came up with this product, if you're not selling this after being like, man, this is it, you know, it could be because of copy, right? I mean, because at the end of the day, there are people that want your services. But I think when you find that product, I think we try to promote the actual features over the benefits, right? I really think you need to promote the benefits and not the actual features of that.
You know, Clint, I think the secret to that for a lot of people who are not trained as copywriters, because those people have a way of like locking in very quickly to what clients want, what the entrepreneurs need, how the whole marketing thing works. The key for them is to not so much worry about features and benefits, but figure out how the service is going to create, there are three parts to this, how the service is going to create value for the customer, or how's the product going to create value for them, not in dollars and cents, not in things that are important to you, for example, Clint, as the maker, but to the client as the buyer. So if they get your thing, what are they going to do with it? And what's that value going to be for them?
Yeah.
If you can understand what that is, the next thing a really good copywriter does is figure out what's the experience like for the customer when they're using that product. Mm-hmm. And that's what they tell a story about. So many people that think, you know, I want to take a copywriting class or this, that, and the other, start to believe that we're trying to manipulate people into buying things. My strongest advice along the copy lines for everybody listening is not to become a manipulator.
Yeah, that's a bad.
Not to be a center of truth, of value creation, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to sustain your business. Lots of folks come out with a really slick marketing message and they've got a great persona and they say some good words and they tie to your emotions. And they're basically manipulating you. And there's so much more research on how we do that with different brain chemistry and words and things like that that trigger emotions and whatnot. But if you don't offer value, you're never going to get referrals. People never refer based on how cool the selling was. They refer based on how well the product or service worked. So I want to repeat this because it's so important. You've got to be able to know what your client values most, define the experience they're going to get, and share that story so they can imagine themselves using your product and service and seeing how that's going to help their business. That's the only story that customers care about.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's like you want to help the customer imagine their future with your product. And if they can imagine that and it looks good, and you can also, you know, say, hey, this is what we've seen with people who have the product or the service. And this is, you know, these could be the results if you don't, you know, so you're like, ooh, I don't like the future. I don't like my future without this product, but I really do like it with the product. But either way, it's not about, you're right. It's not about tricking people. And that just is such a terrible way to sell, because people see right through it. You know, consumers are very smart. They sense and feel when they're being sold to and tricked into buying something that they really don't need. And they're going to seek out the things that they do need. And when that aligns, when your product aligns with what they're looking for, that's amazing. But yeah, tricking is a terrible way to sell. And I feel like sales gets a bad reputation because a lot of people think that it's like, you know, kind of gross and they have to trick people in order to make money. And it just is 180 degrees. You know, it's the exact opposite of that. You're really helping them with their future and aligning them with something that they can really use.
Two thumbs up for that. Yeah. You got to serve before you sell.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, copywriting is one of those things that, like, you know, I'm trying to get better at every day. Right. I think when you go through courses, they try to tell you to use simple language, you know, pick power words, like you mentioned earlier, like tricking people. I don't know if it's really, it can be deemed as manipulative sometimes, you know, using these specific languages or these power words. But at the end of the day, I think if you make people feel something, right, like you say, a connection, that's what it really is. And avoid, and I think really just to say it differently, but avoid being and sounding like that used car salesman. Nobody wants it. I hate it. Like, even when I go to take my truck to the dealership now, or get the phone calls once a week about, hey, we're going to give you like $3,000 off or like add it to your trade-in value. I'm like, I'm good, man. Like, please stop, because that's, again, what year are we in right now? 2021. Nobody likes being sold.
And like all that. The offense possible intended to people who practice that marketing and who sell those used cars. So let's not pull any punches. No.
Yeah.
Not at all. Yeah. Not at all.
Yeah, just push the stop button. Sorry. I'm just kidding. Keep going. Hey, what do you guys think, if you've had any experience with them, about some of these tools that use AI to help you write better? Have you tried any of this?
So I have. I actually have some experience using a tool called Closer's Copy. They did a Lifetime deal a while back, and I still think they're running it right now. And the guy that runs it, his name's Nico. I forget his last name, but man, he continues to, it's a very low entry fee cost compared to all these other ones that are like, you know, it's a monthly cost. He has a lifetime deal. And I think if you go to, his actual website, it is monthly, but there is a back end way to lock in a lifetime deal for not expensive at all.
That's great. And
man, he continues to add to it. Like these other features come in with all this AI. He has the same exact feature. And you're like, man, it blows my mind what you can put in there and what it comes back with. Right. It's just, and I don't know, Mike, have you actually used that?
Well, our company is called StoryMiner. So we're working with words all the time.
Okay.
And I've tried about a half a dozen of them so far. They all work on the same core tool. They have different interfaces on the front end. Mm-hmm. And the basics behind all of them are they're trying to guess what's the next best word for you. Right. Some of them work just with the information that you give them. Others work with everything on the internet and so on. So you might say in your starter copy, which they ask you for, sell ball bearings Tuesday 50%. And it might generate a whole big thing. Like, I'm just going to make this up. Hey, if you're in the ball bearings world, you know that there's nothing more of a commodity than a ball bearing. Right. Except at Joe's Honest Ball Bearings, ours are different. And here's why. It'll come up with all that kind of stuff based on the parameters that you give it. What I'm learning is that you still have to have taste and a good ear for how it sounds and a good eye for how it reads. And you've really got to know your customer, because that stuff can very quickly take you off into, I wouldn't say a dark space, but a place where you sound like too automated.
Yeah.
You know, those robocalls that you get like, hi,
oh, 100%.
I'm John with the insurance company. And you've won a, you know, you can tell when they're sneaky and creepy like that. So breaking through and doing some brainstorming and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think they're very good to give you, like, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced writer's block at some point in your life, right? And so
gone in a heartbeat. Yeah.
I mean, the different variables you can plug in for the output to be different every time, it just blows my mind, because it's like, I didn't even think about that. Now I can add that to it, and it gives you a starting point. And sometimes the stuff that you can actually take all away, because again, it's coming up with different variables and different, you know, copy that isn't, you know, is not something that's plagiarized or anything like that. And you could run it through all those machines, and it's fantastic for that type of stuff.
Yeah. We used one called Copy AI and copytext.ai. And there are a couple other ones out there. Jarvis is another one. And
Copy Shark.
Must be hundreds of them right now.
Exactly.
Something that might be a fun show format for you guys would be to get, you know, since you're in marketing, why don't you get like a half a dozen people, men and women, different ages, different levels of experience, a couple of rank amateurs, like non-copywriters as well, and give them a task and have each of them use a different tool and then kind of go round robin and check in with each one and see how they're doing. That would be like the world's best product review. I bet that would get you some traction.
Oh, for sure, man.
That'd be really awesome. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, it's definitely something that, and not just that tool, but other tools too, we could do kind of a similar thing, because I think, you know, everybody wants to know what the best tool is for whatever it is that they're doing. And yeah, copywriting is so important, and SEO too, you know, optimizing it, not just for how it connects with the customer, but also there's one called, I think, Surfer SEO or surf.io, something like that. It's Surfer in the name, and it resonates with me because I like to surf. So I'll always remember that one, but it more than just connecting with the customer, it helps figure out, you know, what keywords should be in your H1, H2, H3, your body text and all that kind of stuff. So I haven't used it yet, but I'm really, really curious to see how it works.
I have a question for you. If you're selling something that's new, and a lot of the folks who are listening to this show are doing something that's probably kind of new, how do you SEO that? Because people aren't asking for what you do yet. It's like in the Yellow Pages a long time ago, I tried to get customer experience as a column because that's what we were doing at the time. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't do it. I could be a plumber, an electrician, or an attorney, or a sign maker, but I couldn't be a customer experience expert or even a professional speaker. They don't have the categories. SEO is kind of the same. They go by popularity of what's already out there. How do you do something new?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question because it just depends on, and I know Clint, you can speak on this too, but it depends on what, if you have something specifically that people are looking for. So as an example for physical products, because I help people develop physical products, I have one business that we sell surfboard racks and snowboard racks, and people are actually intently looking for those kind of things on Google, on Pinterest, different, you know, places online.
Right.
And it has decent search volume, you know, so there's a decent enough people per month searching for those kind of things that we can make a business out of it, out of just, even if we were just getting in front of those people who are looking for it at like the bottom of the funnel, they're interested in it. They're intent on buying something. But then you have, you know, then obviously you can target the top of the funnel, people who ski. They might not be looking for a ski rack, but they probably need one, you know, it would be helpful for them to have one.
Yeah.
And then there's products like I developed a fishing, a lure retriever for a client. So it helps you, it's a little device, goes on the end of your fishing rod, and it helps you get your lure or your fly back if you get it stuck in a tree. Mm. And very, very few people are looking for that product. So trying to optimize on, you know, trying to optimize a website and get a lot of really good, relevant, intentional organic traffic is really hard.
For sure.
So it's just not a really great strategy. I mean, he can do it, you know, he can get videos up, get some blogs up to get a little more organic traffic. But you really kind of have to hit the top of the funnel with that.
Yeah.
And just target people who aren't necessarily in the market for that, but who could be, you know, so that's really tricky. But if you can find something that a lot of people are already actually searching for, and they have the intention of purchasing, then that's great, because then you can, you know, you can market on, it's easier to market organically on Amazon, on Etsy, on your website, and even for service products like yourself, you know, it's also helpful. But I know exactly what you mean. It's tough when you don't have that.
Very tough.
Yeah.
That was good, Andrew. So Mike, if you had to pick one skill to master that would help move the needle for sales in any business, what would that be?
Oh my gosh. I would probably say asking good questions.
Mm.
Because we all don't know enough.
100%.
And if you ask questions, you will find out what the world needs, and then your other skills can kick in and you can start to supply that in a real profitable and advantageous for everyone way.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, because I don't think we ask enough questions, right? It's like, one, we got to be good at asking them. Two, we have to actually take the time to sit there and think and ask the question, because there's some, I think a lot of people think when they ask questions or too many questions, they're asking dumb questions. And I tell, even when I educate my clients, I'm like, look, I can't fault you for not knowing what you don't know, right? It's my job to educate you along the way and along the process. And then, if you're paying for a service, I would suggest that you learn more about it, but I'm going to actually educate you along the way here. So I don't think, again, they sit back a lot and they don't ask the question because they think you're going to sound dumb. And I'm like, look, look, break that wall down and ask it. I said, because again, even if I think in the back of my mind, I'm like, that's like the basic of basic questions, but I'm going to still answer it in a respectable way. And I'm not going to be like, well, that was dumb. Right. So I always tell my clients, you know, ask the question. I think the one question that's in my eyes dumb is the question not asked.
Yeah. Right? There might be a little bit of a bias, Clint, in the way you brought that up. Because you talked about, you know, being afraid or embarrassed, which to my mind meant you're asking something that you don't know. You're exposing yourself. The better questions, in my opinion, and again, we don't know each other well enough to know if we're on the same page yet or not, but it's all friendly. I like to lean into the questions that the client doesn't know the answer to, so we can solve it together. in professional services, it's all about what you can build by working together. So the more instances of, or little tastes of that, the better. So I might ask a client something like, well, let me start over. A real basic question would be, are you ready to buy? And a real bad question would be like, if I have the right solution for you, would there be any reason why you wouldn't buy it today? You know, the used car salesperson. Those are all self-serving questions, and we know we all hate them.
Right.
A useless question would be, could you tell me a little bit about the history of the firm? You could have done your research on there, you know?
Right. And that doesn't help and a more really anybody too much.
Yeah. A more meaningful question could be something along the lines of, oh my gosh, there's so much going on in the world today. We've got billionaires flying into space, and we have countries, entire countries that haven't been vaccinated yet. Yet we've never had more abundance in the whole world, in the history of the world. How are you dealing with that in your business day to day when it's just so hard to figure out where we are? That's a question. Yeah. That might not be your favorite question. I love to get into stuff like that. But that one shows that I'm sincerely interested, and there is no roadmap. There is no yes, no for that. So I framed a context around complexity, and I asked, how are you dealing with all of that? I bet that's a question that most people don't hear all the time. Now, if you're 18 and you're selling to a 90-year-old, that question is not going to be that interesting. Right. But if you're, you know, if you're in an industry and you're doing a role and you have a product and a service, asking people how they're framing up the world is really legit. And they'll think about it and appreciate you asking the question. And that adds to trust, and it kind of moves the conversation off in a much more interesting direction.
And helps you peel back the layer of the onion, man. I mean, it seems like, you get into layers of complexity and you can get in a full-blown conversation instead of having the dead-end questions as yet the yes or no's. Asking the more complex question is where it's at for sure.
So here are a couple of things that you asked, you know, when we're doing our prep. You asked for a couple of things that were like takeaways, you know, some golden nugget things. So here's something that just about anybody can use. You can ask a question along the lines of, what do you don't have now that you really, really need? What have you had a hard time finding? You know, what are you in the market for and you've been in for a while and you still haven't found what you're looking for? And they'll tell you what that is. If you had that, what kind of value could you create with it for your clients? If you had that, what kind of value could you create with it for your clients? How do you guys react to that? What does that mean?
I mean, it gets you thinking about what you can do for your clients and what you can do for your customers instead of what you can do for yourself, I think. Mm-hmm. Right. So you're not like, I want to be a millionaire. You're like, I want to sell this product or service because I'm genuinely interested in helping somebody else.
Yeah. It also gives you the opportunity to, like you said, to serve, because once they share what their needs are, you might not be the right person or company. You might not have the right product or service, but maybe you know somebody and can refer them. And that's more goodness for everybody. Not everyone's going to be a sale or a target, you know, or a segment of some kind.
Right.
Exactly.
Everything it does is it creates a very honest dialogue. It gets things going. Like the questions you've asked me, you just got me all wound up and going because you've asked some really good questions, and they're not like about what you need. They're about what the audience needs. So,
yeah. Yeah. Right. I mean, that's awesome. I had a conversation with a guy earlier, and it just, as you were talking about that, this kind of comes to mind. We were talking about outsourcing manufacturing in China, and we talked for over an hour, and we probably talked about manufacturing for like 20 to 30 minutes of that. The rest was like, he lives in China, in Shenzhen. He's in Italy right now. We're talking a little bit about Italy and the food there. And then he had a quick trip to Spain. So we're talking about a lifestyle of Spain. I've never been there, but I've heard about it, you know? And so really, and then at the end of it, we were both like, man, that's one of the best conversations that either one of us have had all week. And it had nothing. And he wasn't trying to sell me on his services. I wasn't trying to sell him on anything. It was just like a cool conversation. We, you know, connected where if it worked out, I think it would be a great fit to work together in some capacity. And it's just like, but if it doesn't, it's all good. And there was nothing pushy on either side. So it feels like that's the kind of thing that really just helps. And you're not trying to, nobody's trying to be pushy, which is makes a big difference. Yeah.
I think that's a global thing. Yeah. I think that's true everywhere in the world.
Yeah. 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 And there's, you know, it's good to have fun with work. Yeah. You know, like it's very possible to have fun, do good work and make money and help people. So I think we lose that perspective sometimes.
I think that could be your next book title or your first book title.
There you go.
Do good work. Have fun, make money. That's the formula. There you go.
I love it. Yeah. That's a good life right there, man. Yeah. That's it. That's it. Very cool.
My uncle had a big influence on me, and he told me, if you can't tell the difference between work and play, you are having an amazing life.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're already doing that because you're selling surfboard racks. So
there you exactly. go. Yep. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes it's not all perfect. Like honestly, I'd like to be surfing more than I am or snowboarding more than I am. And instead I'm focused on the business and my product development business. But so it's not like, you know, it's definitely that saying that if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. It's total BS. That's just not realistic, but man, you really can. You can try and get as close to that as possible and you can at least work towards that. And when you are doing something that you like, the good days are even better and the bad days maybe aren't so bad. So yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Sacrifices, man.
Clint, let's do something for Andrew. Yeah. Let's brainstorm a couple of ideas on how he can surf more and sell more at the same time.
100%.
Want to do it?
I'm on board with this exercise.
100%. Yeah. Right.
But I am a huge believer in the front end sacrifices, right? I mean, you know, again, some people luck up in their overnight success, but I think even when you do something you love and you're working inside the business, you have to make sacrifices on the front end to bear the fruits, you know, towards the end. So I really think at the end of the day, it's not, you know, whether you're raised wealthy, whether or not, whether you're like financially educated, whether you're not, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can always put yourself in a position to succeed. But I think on the front end, we all see the Mark Cubans and all these guys, the back end of everything, right? We didn't see their struggles at the beginning and all the sacrifices they made to get to where they are, to be on Shark Tank and just say yes or no, like I'm going to invest in you or not. You know, you don't see what it took, the sweat equity they actually put into that to get to where they are, you know, and I'm sure today they can actually live that life to where they, you know, it's one of those things, you know, I'm good to go. I don't really have to worry about anything.
Yeah. There's an author that's covering a lot of those backstories. His name is Gary Hoover, and he's got an institute and a publishing house. He's also a multi-time successful entrepreneur. Gary Hoover plus American Business would be the search term, and you'll get all kinds of great free articles, backstories on some of the most successful brands and people that made America what it was up until the 50s or 60s. Fascinating stuff. We have no new lessons to learn. Everybody's learned it all, even with this digital age that we have upon us.
Oh, I hear you.
So hey,
we
learn.
Didn't talk about any specific ideas though for Andrew. More and sell more at the same time. Let's you want to do it for a minute and see if we come up with something?
Yeah, go ahead and kick it off.
All right. So there's a company in town called Big Peach, and they sell running shoes. When you go into their store, they were the first company to develop like a custom fit for you. And, you know, they would track your feet with cameras as you were running on a treadmill and stuff like that. Mm. Their latest innovation is take the shoes to the open air spaces that are COVID safe where the runners are. So they outfitted like a van or like a big bus, and it's a mobile store with thousands of pairs of shoes. And they go and you can get your shoes fitted and run in your new pair of shoes. Translate that to surfing racks.
That's cool.
What if you advertise that, you know, hey, if you come down, we'll give you a choice of all the different racks. We'll get it set up right at the beach. You and a couple of, I don't know what you call somebody who installs surfing racks, but you and one or two other people and your social media crew. And you just have people come down, try out the different racks, talk about it. You're creating a ton of social media contact. They walk out with their racks, you know, you're selling. So you got a little Stripe payment or Venmo or whatever you're doing. And you're out there in a bathing suit and you go shoot some, or I don't know how to speak surfer, but shoot some waves or hit some curls. I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, you're getting there. You're getting there.
I love it, dude. Taking that and translating it over to what he's doing as far as like just having that thought process is very unique in itself, Mike. And that's pretty awesome. And I really think at the end of the day, I think his racks are really straightforward, right? As far as installation, I think it's probably the user that does it. I guess you could have Andrew or his, co-founder, go and install them for you specifically, but I'm sure it comes with an additional charge.
Yeah. Yeah. But just, yeah, exactly.
Extra money though, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, sure. Hey, maybe there's, I wouldn't mind living in Hawaii and doing that, that could be an additional fee to go in, set up your rack, or just at least if we could have a tent on the beach and, promote grass racks. Hey, that'd be awesome. Then we could jump in the water. And, as long as the waves aren't too, if we're doing it like pipeline on the north shore of Oahu, I'm that level. So we'd have to pick appropriate spots for, and then my co-founder Evan is like deathly afraid of sharks. So he's more of like the mountain guy. We'll keep him on the mountain and with the land sharks. And,
he's the one that will have the skateboard rack, right?
Like exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So. Exactly. No, that's cool though. Yeah. That's a really cool exercise, Mike. I think more people should do that because we shouldn't be this whole grind till you die mentality is terrible. You have to wake up super early. You have to go to bed super late. You have to work the whole time. You have to drink coffee until it's coming out of your eyes in order to stay up and do it. It doesn't make any sense. Like the grind mentality is so insanely dumb. You can get, if you're well rested, you can get more done in a shorter period of time and go live your life. I mean, it just makes sense. So,
there's one country that started a company here in the United States that started a 4-day work week, 32 hours. Okay. So it's 4 8-hour days with no expectation of working at home, and they give you the same pay. And the early results were higher productivity and happier people.
100%.
Not surprised at all.
Not at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause think about all those hours that people are just sort of screwing around because they're so bored, they're tired, they can't focus, whatever it is. Yeah. And they're just there because they need to be there during, certain hours. And I hope that during COVID, a lot of businesses realized how valuable it is to have people working from home, working a little. Now, some people that doesn't work for. Some people need the structure. Some people will outright tell you, I need the structure. I need to be in an office. Yeah. I can't get work done otherwise. That's one thing. But for the people who can do it themselves, like it's so much. I'm sure that there's plenty of people out there who are working hard for 4 hours, getting as much done as somebody else working 8 to 10,
just
focused and they're doing it and they're getting it done and that's it. So, yeah.
You just gave me an idea for a business. I could put a camera in somebody's office and shoot all four sides of their cube, load it up to full size and then put it in their bedroom. So they look this way and they feel like they're in their cube. What do you think?
Yeah. That's people totally would love that. That's the exact. Yeah. They're like, no, I'm trying virtual to get out cube. Of the cube. The virtual cube. Yeah.
Put some bars on it.
That would be good. There you go. Yeah.
Do you miss your cube? Well, we got a solution for you.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
There's something about storytelling that I think everyone that's listening might like to hear. It goes back to the beginning of our conversation. One of you said the phrase future story. And that happens to be the name of one of the things that we've been pioneering here at Story Miners. Not a commercial pitch here, just an explanation.
Yeah.
When companies are trying something new, they often run into a lot of resistance internally with their partners, with their suppliers, and even with their customers. So what we're finding is there's a very strong success rate if the leaders of the company define what that future state experience is going to be in a lot more detail than they're used to. So instead of saying, I want 10% more sales and we're cutting your sales territory in half, and I need these new metrics hit over here. And by the way, we're going to do 2 product revs this year, not one. That's typically what a strategy would be made of, with spreadsheets and PowerPoints. They would be required to describe what's a day in the life of an employee and a customer going to be like when all the changes they have envisioned are enacted? So they have to think through what all those changes are. We have a new commission system. We have upgrades to CRM. We have a chatbot. We have this new product development thing that we're doing. So you write a story over here in the future that talks about all those things working seamlessly together, and you leave it to the reader to kind of figure out the very last part. You leave it for them to write the final parts of the story. But you go 90%. It's all framed up. They get to like put the bow on the package and they feel like they own it.
And They own it. Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Done with them and by them as opposed to them.
Sure. Nice. Yeah. If they can be, I think if you can be a part of that story and that's, you know, really helpful. And then being able to describe that in vivid detail, really helps you understand it and really helps you frame it up better for your customer. I love that. Yeah. So Mike, what do you think has been the hardest part about entrepreneurship for you, about, you know, being in business?
Let's see. It's definitely the personal side, because there are some times that you have to dig deeper than you ever thought you'd have to go. So having a support system around you with friends and family and colleagues and coworkers and all of that's super helpful. Every time you get ready to work with somebody, you need to look hard at whether they'll help you, and if you're willing to help them as you're forming your core team, because you need people that can go above and beyond. Somebody, when I worked at IBM as their e-visionary, described it to me as their runway. So when they're hiring people, they'd look not for people that were already flying at maximum altitude. They'd look for people that are already moving down their runway and were just ready to take off, because those are the folks that can really go and soar. So if you're young, if you don't have a ton of experience, if you're trying really hard, but the way isn't super clear, surround yourself with the best people you can, the ones that inspire you, that you know will support you, the ones that you'll learn from, and those to whom you can make a valued contribution as well. Because you're not just trying to get a job done, you're building a lifelong ecosystem. You never know who you're going to be working with as a partner or a customer or a supplier. Change happens in your life, their life, the world changes. This building falls down, that new invention happens, and boom, you're working together on something totally different. But that the firmness and the quality of those relationships early in age and early in business are just worth 10 times their weight in gold.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you don't necessarily know what something could lead to until you might think, I don't know if talking with, you know, a person about whatever it is, like having the conversation I did earlier about manufacturing. I'm like, I don't know if I needed that conversation. I don't know if it'll lead to anything soon, but even a few years down the road, if it leads to something amazing, that's incredible. You just never know what things will turn into. So that's awesome.
That advice is a little bit random walk, you know, coming back to language, because Clint, you've mentioned copy a number of times in our conversation today. One of the most valuable things that you can do is start listening to a little bit more news and a couple of interview shows. And it doesn't have to be about business or music or whatever you love. It can be about anything. But start paying attention to the questions and see if you can pick up some patterns from the better asked questions. Mm. Like Reed Zakaria from CNN, amazingly insightful questions. He elicits so much better response than so many other people do. This is way before most of our times, but Art Linkletter was one of the very first talk show hosts, and he had a segment about kids where he'd ask them questions and get them to reveal all kinds of amazing things about their parents. One of his favorite questions was, "What did your mommy tell you not to say on TV?" And that just like lit everybody off. It was so much fun.
That's amazing.
So the questions is one thing. And then start reading more, because when you read, especially nonfiction, you'll learn how to say things better. Your vocabulary will expand and you'll be able to be more precise. One of the things that slows down business and slows down progress so much is when people can't say what they mean and can't say what they want. So one of the self-service things you can do is just, you know, grab your phone, plug any Audible book into it that's really high quality, and listen. But listen to try to learn the speech patterns.
Yeah.
If English isn't your first language, one of the ways that you can improve is to turn anything on and start repeating it. So I speak four languages, and this really helped me immerse myself in Brazil and the former Soviet Union. Listening to the radio, you know, I don't know why I'm doing this because that's not how you listen to a radio. But you're listening to the radio or a song or whatever it is, and you try to repeat in real time what they're saying.
Okay.
So you're just mimicking. And what that does is it increases your RAM, if you will, your ability to hold things that you don't understand and to articulate them. So if you have an accent, if you feel nervous about your English, if you want to improve your vocabulary, just start mimicking what other people say. It'll help you get the cadence, the rhythm, the pauses, the breathing, the volume, all those little nuanced things that people use to judge you. It'll help you clear all that stuff out of the way and give you a huge amount of comfort in your own ability to communicate. And then you'll notice people are listening into you. And that's where your confidence will come from.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll see that more and more people paying attention, and it might even be a little bit shocking. Like, oh, wow, they're actually listening to what I'm saying. I must be saying in a good way that resonates. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, that's intoxicating. If you haven't had that happen, you're in for a real treat. I can tell all three of us have had that before.
Yeah.
So Mike, I mean, you mentioned several things just now, but as we wrap up this episode, because I think me and Andrew could sit here and talk to you all day. If you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice, what would it be?
Well, you know, in StoryMiner's history, we've done a few things. We've done Marcom, customer experience, and now we're using Story as strategy. So I'm going to go back a few years and I'll wrap up with this. No matter how hard you try or how much you spend, your brand can't be any better than what your customers experience. So everything that your company does, from a chatbot to a receipt to, you know, an email, it's all part of your brand. And you're never going to be any better than the experience that you explicitly, on purpose and by design, give to them. So start raising your game on the details of your experience, and you will score higher.
Yeah,
I love it.
That's amazing advice. Yeah, I think customer service is also underrated and takes more than a fancy logo and some cool lettering and colors and, you know, like a cool theme to make a good brand. I completely agree. You could have an okay theme, an okay logo, you know, and just absolutely kill it with customer service and wow people, and that's it. They'll,
you know, those logo marks represent something, and the experience is the something. So ideally you're not making the service reflect the mark. The mark reflects the product service combination.
I love that.
And how you treat that. People. Yeah. They just use that as a reminder, like that Nike swoosh. What does that mean to you? That means you think back. It's the product. It's the experience. It's the athlete. Right. Inside the company, it refers to everybody is an athlete. They have a tremendous amount of respect inside of Nike for their customers. They don't think of them as, you know, 800 pound couch potatoes. They think of everyone
as an athlete.
And that's
and they want to address them to help you bring out that athlete. I mean, just do it. They're trying to they're trying to elicit that, bring that athlete out in everybody, because and then just inspire them to do it with such a really short but sweet tagline. So,
and it helps to have several $1 billion of advertising budget to hammer that.
That doesn't hurt. Yeah, that doesn't hurt.
Yeah, that would help us all.
Exactly. That's awesome.
Well, guys, I think that's a wrap for this episode. From the both of us, Mike, we want to thank you for taking the time out of your day and joining us and adding value to what we're doing on our podcast.
Thank you, guys. I learned a lot too. Pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, it was great to have you on, Mike. Really, really pleasure to have you on. Still a pleasure from the beginning and to the end.
Exactly.
Can confidently say that. Thank you all so much for listening to That Entrepreneur Life. To learn more about what Mike is working on, check out storyminers.com. And if you like what you heard today, please subscribe to our podcast and don't forget to download our free ebook about the success mindset at thatentrepreneurlife.com.
Thanks for continuing to support what we do as entrepreneurs, and don't forget to join us next week for another episode of That Entrepreneur Life.
Thanks for listening to That Entrepreneur Life podcast. Be sure to visit thatentrepreneurlife.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode as we continue to add value. Until next time.